Last speaker is Michael Dentato. Mr. Dentato is a member of the faculty of the School of Social Work at Loyola University Chicago. His scholarship and research centers around sexual minority health and wellness, student preparedness to practice with LGBTQ populations, and macro practice. Dr. Dentato has served on various local and national boards, including the Council on Sexual Orientation, Gender Identity, and Expression of CSWE, Chicago's Test Positive Aware Network, and he's also an associate editor for behavioral medicine. Let's welcome him.
Are you still awake? Mm-hmm. All right, bear with us. We enjoying Chicago? Mm-hmm. Welcome to Chicago, for those who have not been. This has been a really exciting journey in many ways, and I'm happy to share it with you. We've done a lot of siloing, unfortunately, and only presenting this among social workers. So we're trying to broaden our reach and build bridges interprofessionally and with regard to the public health sector. So I'm glad you're here. We have no relationships to disclose. Similar to what some of my colleagues have already said, we clearly know that there remain challenges with regard to likelihood for LGBTQ individuals to seek services, more so than heterosexual counterparts, specifically when it comes to health and mental health care. And quite often when they are seeking and receiving services in the health and mental health care sectors, they have experiences of discrimination, oppression, stigma, and subpar treatment as well. That we need to do better with regard to educating practitioners across disciplines in order to deliver competent services for all sexual and gender minority populations, and that we've got to be better with developing and including culturally sensitive programs to address substance use, abuse, addiction, parenting, IPV, MPV, DV, as well as specialized medical care programs for gay men, lesbians, and members of the bi and transgender community as well. So students often feel incompetent, right, to practice with LGBTQ clients, and that includes both LGBTQ students and non-LGBTQ students. And at the same time, LGBTQ clients experience homophobia and heterosexism from students while they're in field placements, internships, and so on, as well as from practitioners. This can have implications for effective and ethical practice, as well as service provisions for the queer community across the lifespan. So lastly, while there's a lack of training related to LGBTQ concerns among most of our helping professions, there is some evidence that the training students receive does increase their self-perceived readiness to practice with LGBTQ clients. So the purpose of our study was a mixed method, and it was to look at the training and educational experiences of LGBTQ, Q identified as queer, social work students enrolled in MSW and BSW programs accredited by the Council on Council on Social Work Education in the U.S. and Canada. Criteria for inclusion in the study was 18 or older, enrollment in an undergraduate or graduate social work program, identification as LGBTQ, and ability to speak English. The instrument was a mixed multiple choice categorical, some open-ended questions looking at their experiences within these three areas at the individual, institutional, and programmatic level. Institutional, so individual, what would you assume is some of the typical socio-dems. Institutional, looking at religious affiliation, implicit, explicit stuff like policies, friendliness, perceptions of friendliness, student orgs, physical spaces, mentoring programs, targeted recruitment, admission components, and gender-neutral bathroom spaces. And similar kind of at the programmatic level, looking at some of the same issues, right? Availability of groups, physical spaces, mentoring, recruitment, field settings, how responses to discrimination were managed in the classroom, outness, right? Disclosure of self, disclosure from faculty and administrators, and so on. Data was collected in 2012. We had IRB approval from my colleague Shelley Craig and I, as well as other institutions. Just a quick side note. It's really interesting that some institutions had to put our study through their own IRB process in order to distribute it to their students, which kind of prolonged the process. But we were patient. We wanted numbers. We used some of our disciplinary listservs, lots of acronyms up there. I already flubbed the first one. Second one is National Association of Social Workers, National Association of Deans and Directors, and so on. There was an optional entry for a gift card as an incentive. It was an internet-based questionnaire. We had 136 programs across 52 states or provinces in the U.S. and Canada. It took about 30 minutes to complete. So I'm going to give you some of our readiness to practice findings. We ran a couple of regressions, as well as some of the descriptive statistics as well. In looking at readiness to practice and student self-assessment of readiness to practice, we ran regressions by client population, right? Readiness to practice with lesbians compared to gay men, compared to bisexuals and transgenders, as well as a regression for the assessment of their non-LGBT peers. Right, so we asked the LGBT students what were their perceptions of their non-LGBT peers' readiness to practice across the three subpopulations. So the two linear regressions addressed transgender population, used transgender-specific questions, replacing sexual orientation and using gender identity. So typical of schools of social work, a majority were under the 29 and under, followed by the 30-somethings, predominantly white and non-Hispanic, a majority of women, followed by men, and clearly a majority of lesbians, followed by bisexual identification and gay then queer. Majority of participants were from California, Illinois, New York, followed by Michigan, Texas, Pennsylvania, Mass, and Ontario. Response rates were clearly affected by states and provinces with the highest concentrations of accredited social work programs and largest BSW-MSW student populations, including those that are listed. So with regard to programs, content, and readiness, just over 1,000 were enrolled in the, out of 1,000, 76% were in MSW programs and 24% were in BSW programs. 44% of students received LGBTQ content in their classes while simultaneously experiencing challenges associated with student and faculty homophobia and transphobia. I can make a lot of comments about that, but we'll save that for later. Students also reported low levels of self-assessed readiness to practice with LGBT populations, with students reporting moderate levels of self-assessed readiness with gay individuals compared to low levels of self-assessed readiness with trans individuals. About a third of the social work programs had a specific student group. None had a mentoring program, a targeted recruitment process, or LGBT-specific spaces. A third of students had experienced homophobia in their programs, but less than half were very out. Many felt their LGBT identity was at least somewhat supported in their social work program, and most felt pressured to educate their peers, faculty, or department and serve as that role model. With regards to content, for LGBQ compared to T content, most common means of inclusion were faculty introduced compared to student-led and required readings, the tokenized student reading, right? Let's just throw a reading in. We've covered the LGBT issue. Sorry. For transgender content, the most common means of inclusion were student-led discussions, notice the flip, versus faculty-introduced topics and required readings. So, like, look at that flip between sexual orientation and gender identity. Unsurprising, LGBTQ content was notably more likely to be included compared to transgender content. More than two-thirds of students felt that LGBTQ topics were handled well. Just over a third felt transgender topics were handled well. With regard to faculty, staff, and peers, about 80% felt that at least 50% of their faculty were supportive of LGBTQ issues. About half felt that at least half of the faculty were supportive of transgender issues. Curious commentary here, an additional 25%, additional quarter, did not know. A majority were aware of openly LGBTQ faculty, admin, or staff. About 20%, 19% thought faculty behaved and spoke in ways that reflected their own homophobia. About 50% unsure of whether faculty members intervened when students displayed homophobia. 35% of participants indicating they were sure their faculty members did. And a large percentage knowing openly LGBTQ students. On that regression, just a little comparison here about self-assessed versus non-LGBTQ peers. You can see some differences here. The darker pink is the self-assessment at the somewhat well level compared to lower levels for their non-LGBTQ peers across the populations. Some quick findings. Readiness to practice across all student groups was influenced by feeling supported in terms of their identity, the way topics were handled in classes, and class discussion of challenges being an LGB or Q social worker. Policies. We're doing better with, I'm going to have to wrap because of time. We're doing better with policies when it comes to sexual orientation than when we're having policies based on gender identity. Students generally didn't know whether their programs had sexual orientation policies at a much larger level on gender identity compared to sexual orientation, and almost none filed non-discrimination policy grievances. Limitations, clearly underrepresentation of ethno-racial minority and male populations within social work education, not representative of students in doctoral programs, continuing ed programs, and so on. That's our really colorful cover of the study that I would gladly provide to all of you for free. The link is at the end of this. If you guys have access to the PowerPoints, or just shoot me an email, I can get that to you. So implications. We need to be better at revising and fixing our curricula across all programs, specifically addressing concerns for LGBTQ students and clients with regard to disclosure, with regard to discrimination. We need to be better at providing resources in the field, providing external supports for students while they are in field. Discussion of LGBTQ identity development, health, and mental health issues in seminars, using LGBTQ professionals as mentors, ongoing trainings for both faculty, admin, and field instructors. At the explicit level, integration of more content, clarifying differences between SOGI, faculty training, introducing and managing content, non-discrim policies and statements that are visible and addressed both within classes, on websites, be better at capturing admission paperwork and so on. As we've heard earlier, we do terrible at collecting that data. Implicitly having groups, using social media, cultivating student rapport and support. So we have a lot of work to do. I've got 3 seconds left. And I think I'll wrap there. References, those are the pubs that we've had out so far from this data. That link there is the actual study I was pointing to before. There's my contact info or Shelley's info. If you want any of this, we'd be glad to distribute it and send it to you. And thank you.
Question.
Recruitment is a sticky subject, right? And it depends on the institution. We barely kind of started digging into public versus private institutions or religious affiliated versus non-religious affiliated. Targeted recruitment can happen, but for example, at Loyola, we don't collect any type of information on sexual orientation or gender identity. We only recruit at typical, college fairs and so on. We do nothing to reach out to LGBT caucus listservs or anything like that. There's so much that can be done. So if you have suggestions, I'd take them as well. Other questions or comments? Yeah.
I should have a question.
Sure.
I'm on the faculty of the School of Health Sciences at Cleveland State University. And what the university-wide initiatives we've been very focused on related to health and public health, interprofessional education, and interprofessional training of clinicians. So my question for you would be, what would be the implications of these findings within the context of interprofessional training?
That we need to do more. That I've been at Loyola for 8 years, and we are just talking to nursing and medicine about working together and talking about ESPERT stuff and talking about poverty sim stuff and all that, and literally not even working with the theater department to do things like simulation. So it's kind of scary that we've been around over 100 years and we're just having this conversation now. And I found that everyone really welcomes the conversation. Everyone wants to come to the table and talk about it. It broadens the potential for grant applications at the federal level and far beyond. And we have a lot to learn from each other. You know, we talk about this like this is shocking in 2015, but we need to step up to the plate. Why aren't we doing more about addressing issues of the bisexual students, right? I'm so tired of hearing about this. Like, we're doing really well when it comes to gay white men for the most part, but everyone else, it just is a downward slope, right? Maybe a little bit better on trans recently, minutia. So I don't know. I think we need to kind of step up to the plate, and when we talk about interprofessional or interdisciplinary collaborations, it has to be hearty and it has to be a real collaboration, you know? Yeah.
No.
And I think we need to do more of this. Like, I'd have a heart attack if there were more public health people at social work conferences. It just never happens. We stay siloed, right? And we stay siloed at our own professional conferences. So that's maybe a place to start, too.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about training programs in particular, right, this has been a long conversation in the medical field, and certainly something we've been talking about a lot more at Harvard Medical School recently in terms of thinking about all the recommendations it seems that you made were incredible in terms of making progress. But I wonder, similar on the medical field, we talk about, you know, maybe adding an item on the USMLE medical licensing exams to maybe really enforce the LGBT care needs to be implemented in a medical education. I wonder if there's something else like that in social work where it could not just be a number of recommendations, but something much more systematic that could occur.
You know, we have been working so I've been involved with the Council on Social Work Education for over 10 years. They still won't collect sexual orientation and gender identity data. And every year they come back to us and they say, how can we be better at surveying? And every year we come back and say, SOGI. And it just doesn't happen, you know? So I think there are so many ways. I mean, just integrating comments. I mean, we're doing a little bit better when I think about, like, you know, DV and IPV or substance use and abuse and screening and intake and that kind of stuff. I think gender-preferred pronouns is one great way, right? And introducing that into the language is an important part of small ways that we can create change. Are there gender-neutral bathrooms available at this conference? Have they been identified? Does anyone know?
No.
So why isn't APHA stepping up? Seriously, how embarrassing is that? We don't have to look beyond this room to say that there's so much that we can be doing. And whether it's in a training program or undergraduate or graduate or doctoral degree program, policies, and, you know, when I first got to Loyola, the discrimination policy didn't include gender identity or expression. And at that point, when I joined faculty, we had 5 openly transgender identified students and nothing in our discrimination policy. Like, how embarrassing. And I had to bring that to the faculty as the new guy on the block. I'm like, seriously? Like, stop turning the blind eye. So,
great.
Thanks.
Thank you.